Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Around the Horn, our monthly fixed income roundtable conversation with UBS Asset Management's fixed income team. On a monthly basis, we do hear from top portfolio managers and business heads from UBS Asset Management's muni, taxable, fixed income, and liquidity teams. We do hear candidly from them on their views on the markets and what they believe you should be focused on within the fixed income space. Joining us for the August edition, glad to welcome back Anthony Liotti, our moderator for today. Anthony also serves as head of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group. We're also joined by Dave Walczak, Senior Portfolio Manager for Liquidity Strategies, Dave Vignolo, head of U.S. Corporate Fixed Income Strategies, Matt Iannucci, head of U.S. High Yield Strategies, David Michael, Portfolio Manager for Emerging Markets, as well as Chuck Grande, head of the Municipal Investment Team and Senior Municipal Portfolio Manager. So with that, Anthony, I'll now pass it over to you to lead this month's roundtable. Welcome back.
Welcome to the August edition, 2024, of Around the Horn. Summer is moving along quickly, and we last spoke mid-July as we were coming off the heels of the Fed meeting, whereby Chair Powell and the committee kept rates unchanged. Powell went on to state that the U.S. economy was no longer, in his views, overheated, and that the job market has cooled considerably from its pre-pandemic era extremes, and that reducing policy restraint too little or too late could unduly weaken economic activity and employment. Since then, the Treasury market has been on an absolute tear, due to I'd say softer than expected unemployment data, PPI data, coupled with just an extraordinary amount of volatility in both the equity and fixed income markets. When we started the month of August, much of the volatility that we saw was caused by an apparent yen carry trade, which really impacted the equity markets and then caused a really strong rally in treasuries. You know, we saw the VIX rise to a high of 65.5, essentially, which was, a level exceeded only twice in history, once during 2008, the financial crisis, and then the second time during COVID. So a lot of volatility over the past couple of weeks here within the market standpoint. What it's done to treasuries, from a rate standpoint, we're now seeing treasuries at a similar place to where we began the year. Yields on 2-year, 5-year, and 10 years are essentially just a tad lower than where we began the year. The 30-year treasury remains just slightly higher. What is happening broadly within the markets is that there is blatantly a clear divide between where the Fed thinks the economy is and where the market thinks the economy is. The Fed's last comments did not state, or at the very least did not lead us to believe, that they felt the economy was or is slowing down considerably to the point where we would need 125 basis points of cuts in 2024, which is pretty amazing. Yet, that is where the market is currently pricing in 125 basis points of cuts. So it seems like we're going to have that sort of second great debate, if you will, postmortem, to see if the Fed got it wrong for the second time in the cycle, or will the markets, I'd say, desire to see aggressive cuts overshoot and then on the read and on the economy, and ultimately see the score even out one to the Fed and one to the markets. What we do know is that the Fed is going to begin to cut in September. It's just by what we don't know is by how much. I'd like to think that, perhaps we would get some additional clarity at the upcoming economic forum next week in Jackson Hole. Perhaps Chair Powell, who's expected to speak, as he usually does, will provide a bit more, guidance or clues on how they've interpreted the recent data since the last meeting, and also perhaps if they've made any adjustments in their views, but let's not hold our breath. I'll say this before I turn it over to the PMs. We're going to continue to see price volatility and yield volatility, and in fact, in my opinion, we could see, if the market does get this wrong, we would probably see treasury yields retreat to, earlier or mid-July levels. In my opinion, I'd say if we were to experience an increase in yield like that, I would, say to clients, for those who've been waiting on the sidelines to extend and take on duration, that might be a really good time to then go and, again, as we've always said throughout these calls, leg into these trades, get a bit more aggressive as we clearly do enter into this easing cycle. And so with that, let me turn it over to our PMs and get their thoughts, observations, and comments on the positioning across our different strategies. We'll start, like we always do, on the short end with Dave Walczak. So, Dave, why don't you take it away, my friend?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Anthony. So I think you did a good job kind of outlining some of the recent market repricing as it relates to the Fed. Just a few other data points worth highlighting. You'd mentioned, obviously, the upcoming meeting in September, the market kind of debating whether or not the Fed goes 25 or 50. Currently in Fed funds futures, we have 35 basis points priced in. I think ourselves, we'd probably, be closer to the 25% or 25 basis point cut than 50. I think given that we, at least thus far, have kind of maneuvered around the volatility that we saw earlier last week, I don't think that necessarily warrants a 50 basis point cut by the Fed. Certainly not an emergency intermediate cut like, you probably heard some folks calling for around that time. So. But you're right. We'll hear from Fed Chair Powell at Jackson Hole. That'll be pretty key in terms of, his current views in terms of where policy is likely to go going forward. But yeah, I think we're definitely, sympathetic to the view that, cuts are definitely coming. It's just going to be, how much and when. So, but as it relates to, kind of what we're seeing in our markets, I would just highlight just in terms of flows and money market funds, we continue to see some strength there. Overall, money market fund AUM as of last week on the 7th stood at about $6.18 trillion, which is up about $300 billion year to date. So, we continue to see assets hanging around in money market funds. I think clearly, given the fact that the Fed hasn't cut, given that we are seeing an inverted curve as you go further out, some clients are still attracted to the higher yields that money market funds are offering. A little bit further out the curve, just looking at corporate spreads, we did see, clearly some widening last week around some of the volatility. Some of that has come back. Just in terms of some of the peak widening that we did see earlier last week, just to put it in context a little bit, we did see 0 to 1 year corporate credit spreads out about 13 basis points. 1 to 3 year spreads were actually out about 10 basis points. But as I mentioned, both have kind of retraced some of those wides over the ensuing days as some of the immediate fears around the situation in Japan have kind of dissipated. That's kind of all I have on my side. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dave Vignola to talk about corporates off the curve.
No, thanks, David. On the investment grade credit side, it continues to remain on very solid footing. And really, that's driven by two things. One, all in yields on the corporate space continue to hover in the low 5% range for all in yields, which historically is an attractive entry point for investors. And two, because of that, we're seeing very consistent, strong inflows into the asset class. I think through last week, we're up to about $234 billion of inflows into the investment grade credit. So investors continue to go into the space to capture that yield in high quality assets. And lock in those yields for a longer period of time from an historical perspective. So, with that and fundamentals, second quarter earnings are kind of wrapping up, and the way it seems to be progressing is another decent quarter for corporate America. So, fundamentals are relatively stable, attractive yields, strong inflows, and I think the base case, Anthony talks about, the Fed's going to most likely cut in September. They'll go 25 or 50 basis points. But I think the underlying trend continues to be the base case is a soft landing scenario for growth. So if that's the case for investment grade credits, that's a very positive outcome if growth slows but doesn't slow too materially. So, with those reasons, we continue to still favor credit and have some, in terms of our views on certain sectors. We continue to like the financial sector versus some other sectors. Our BBB exposure we're a little more cautious in the BBB space. We've kind of moved up in quality somewhat. There's been a little more volatility in the asset class where there's been some opportunities through the new issue market to take advantage of those certain situations. But in general, I think the ship is continues to move forward and credit continues to be a very favorite asset class for investors. I would say that You know, from a credit curve perspective, we continue to favor the belly of the credit curve, kind of that 3 to 7 year part of the credit curve, because we think that eventually, as the Fed starts to cut, the treasury curve will normalize. When I say normalize, it'll normalize to a steepening treasury curve. And so we want to take advantage of those opportunities for our investors in the credit space. So, you know, really outside of that, everything's pretty strong and steady from that perspective. And we continue to look for opportunities for the the space. And I would say in general, this volatility that David Walczak talked about is a great opportunity for all of our clients. It's presenting opportunities for us either through the new issue market or through our analysts when they make issuer selections. So we're very excited about those opportunities for our clients. But, you know, with that, I will pass it over to Matt Iannucci to talk about high yield.
Yeah, since last time we spoke, much of what my colleagues said before me, you know, we've seen market volatility jump to levels not seen for quite some time, and high yield by no means was insulated from this. You know, spreads have traded within a narrow 25 to 30 basis point range for most of the year, but pushed 80 basis points wider from July levels, touching near 390 basis points before retracing almost 50% of the move, and currently settling in at levels around 350 basis points, while yields ended up unchanged over the time period at 760. Despite the pickup in volatility, credit fundamentals remain strong, with most of the companies having reported Q2 results. You know, corporate health in a broad sense has remained on a sound footing. What we are starting to hear, though, is some forward guidance to have more of a cautionary tone for the second half of the year. This based mainly off of Fed rate action as well as growth data as it becomes more polarized. You know, interestingly, over this period of volatility, triple C's did outperform, led mainly by distressed credits, as some of the positive idiosyncratic headlines posted causing these outsized returns relative to higher rated credits. And despite fast money outflows within the space that were generated from ETFs, buyers of higher and middle tiered rated paper has stepped in looking to take advantage of any price weakness, keeping the technical demand picture pretty strong. Similar to the IG space, the new issue calendar was uncharacteristically active for the time period of the year. Most of the managers are willing to spend down some of that excess cash levels that has been building. Most of the deals continue to be oversubscribed, pricing near or through tight ends of original talk, showing further demand levels still intact. You know, given some of the nearing headlines, such as the Fed cut timing and size, and let's not forget the presidential elections approaching, we should expect to see additional periods of elevated volatility. And much of what Dave and Anthony had mentioned, we view these periods as opportunities to start adding, given, you know, the strong fundamentals and the supportive economy that we see going forward. At that time, I'll stop, and I'll turn it over to David Michael to discuss emerging markets.
Thank you, Matt. Over the last month, you know, as pretty much everyone's pointed out, we saw a pretty impressive rally in U.S. interest rates. You know, 10-year tightened by 35 basis points. EM was not able to keep up with the Treasury rally, and that led spreads about 20 basis points wider. But this still left emerging market debt with another month of positive returns. Supply has declined over the month of July and August, and this continues to leave emerging market external debt with net negative supply and continues to reflect our expectation that there will be net negative supply for the rest of the year. This is a positive technical that continues to support emerging markets. I know I've talked about elections in emerging markets. Those have slowed as we've gone to the second half of the year. There was an election in Venezuela in late July. Most of the observers believe the opposition won 2/3 of the votes, while the government claimed that President Maduro won the election with 51% of the popular vote. There have been some protests, and the situation remains very fluid. If Venezuela is able to, or after Venezuela is able to move past the election, it has massive potential upside, as they sit on the world's largest proven crude oil reserves. Also on emerging markets, Paraguay and Azerbaijan were both upgraded to investment grade, and we expect rating agencies to move in the same direction over the next few years. El Salvador indicated that They are finally making progress on an IMF deal that's been awaited for the last few years. And Ukraine announced a restructuring deal to restructure their debt after they defaulted in 2022 after the Russian invasion. Looking towards the second half of the year, we see the shift of focus will be on Fed policy, German regional elections, and U.S. presidential elections. These are all likely to impact market volatility, and it highlights the risk of opportunities within fixed income. And as Matt mentioned, we see this volatility as an opportunity to step in and add to exposure for emerging markets. Here, let me hand it off to Chuck for an update from our Muni team.
Thank you very much. So just tagging along with what my taxable brethren have already spoken about, the Muni market in this type of environment where we see rate volatility and strong positive performance does get dragged along in this type of environment, generating positive performance in the month of July, approximately up 91 basis points, taking year-to-date performance to positive 50 basis points, and it just continues in the month of August. So far in the month of August, Muni returns are a positive 66 basis points, leading to year-to-date performance of positive 117 basis points, 1.17%. So it's been a very positive environment for the Muni market. I think the direction provided by the taxable side of the market is a win behind us. I think also we've had very strong technicals in our market. We have had strong supply. 3 weeks prior to this week, we had 3 weeks of plus $10 billion in issuance, but we've had just as strong demand in the Muni market. For most of the summer, if you looked at flows into the asset class, they're substantially positive the entire summer long, to the point where year-to-date demand for municipal bonds, when you look at the mutual fund complex, it shows us up close to $16.2 billion in additional demand for the Muni market. So the positive velocity provided by taxable rates dragging Muni performance along, plus just a positive technical environment has been very good for the Muni market in terms of availability to get invested. But I would say that when I look at the curve, it was pointed out to me earlier in the day, you know, the Muni curve is really becoming less and less inverted. And I agree with that. Certainly when you look at absolute yields, that is the case. However, we're not ready to reposition at this stage of the game. We really want to, you know, see the performance before we start repositioning, in particular an immediate strategy. We've been slightly long the competition and the peer group during this period of time. So this performance is finally really starting to pay off for how we've been positioned. And we'd like to tag along in it for a little bit longer before we start making any substantial moves in terms of positioning the portfolio. Thus far, year to date, the best place to be invested in the Muni market, when you look at our indices across the board, has been the one-year area, providing 195 basis points of positive performance. And this really has been the anchor for us in the intermediate strategy, positioning the 1 year and our barbell out longer. So again, still paying positive dividends for us in terms of positioning. We're looking to ride that going forward. Nothing really on the credit front at this stage of the game in terms of, you know, worrying clouds or anything along that line. It's actually been a fairly quiet period, but I think you need to take advantage of the ability to get invested in this market right now. I had expected supply to dry up a little sooner than it has dried up, primarily because of the national election coming up, and typically we see muni issuance slow down. So I just encourage people to continue to leg in, as Anthony mentioned earlier, continue to leg into the market, take advantage of the opportunity to get invested in this market, because I do expect that in the not-too-distant future, it may be difficult to get your hands on supply exactly when you want to. I'll end there, and I'll turn it back to you again, Anthony.
With that, thank you very much for tuning in again to the August edition of Around the Horn. We'll be back the next time, probably after the Fed meets. So we look forward to you joining us again, and thank you for tuning in, and have a great rest of the summer. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.